The caravan stopped to pitch camp, and Ryan spoke hurriedly and in hushed tones as he relayed to the others what had happened to him.
Not just you.
Christy noted the questioning look she received from the others.
During the storm, I was attacked. Not directly like you were. Maybe it was the same person, which would figure if it was one of the sect behind us, but I saw someone moving past me, and then they seemed to drop back a little. I never heard the shot, but I felt the slug go past me, so close that I could feel how damn hot it was. It made me pull up quickly, but I don't know, I couldn't quite believe it. Thought I might have been mistaken. I think I'd probably still be thinking that if you hadn't just told us what you have.
Dark Knight, we're gonna have to be triple red from now on. Some of these bastards might be okay with us tagging along, but the others are gonna be direct about showing how they don't like it.
Ryan looked around. The Inuit had made camp for the night out on the trail. The sleds, driven by dogs, had carried tents that were pitched and weighted to act as windbreaks on the vast expanse of wasteland. Behind these, groups of Inuit huddled together under extra skins and furs, while the dogs hunkered down close to them. Allocated sect patrols were visible, carrying lamps and blasters, scouting the surrounding area. The companions had their own windbreak and gave themselves some distance. Jordan was out of sight, but the prime objective now was to stay alive during the night. They divided into watches of their own and got an uneasy night's rest, unwilling to trust the sect patrols of the Inuit. As Ryan took watch, he looked to the horizon. In the direction they were headed, there was a small vill within view, laying about 500 yards from the path of the trading trail. He figured they had probably passed one during the storm as well. No signs of life from either. The Inuit had acted as though it was a direct route to Fairbanks, with no problems en route, and he could see why. They had already laid waste to anything that may lay between the volcanic region and their destination. Well, many of the bastards wanted to lay waste to them as well. It was only when morning came that he felt he could relax, which wasn't a good thing. How could they stay on top of their game if they had to keep awake while the Inuit slept, and then try to keep pace with the caravan? They would need their wits about them when they hit Fairbanks, but another day of this, and they would be operating below their best. No time to consider this, as they set off across the wastes once more, the windbreaks and extra furs stowed on the sleds, the dogs and pack horses setting pace with the leading Inuit. It came to the point where all attention was focused on putting one foot in front of the other. At least the day was clear of storms. The winds still blew strong, but only carried residual particles of ice. The clouds scudded across the skies, too fast to settle and dump their loads on the caravan below. At least they were making rapid progress, so much so that they had arrived at the deserted vill before the sun was halfway across the sky. Consisting of little more than a few log and cinder block huts, it had an air of desolation, as though it had been deserted for some time. As they neared it, the companions could see that the caravan had halted. Jordan was conferring with Thompson, and both men were gesturing toward the deserted vill. The chief beckoned Macindo over to him, and after a few brief words, the sect chief began to make his way to the rear of the caravan.
What's going on?
Something I'm betting we're not gonna like.
The sect chief approached them.
We're checking that vill, see if anyone's still around.
I'm guessing that you could just as easily tell that from here.
It's not my job to say, just to do.
So why are you telling us?
Because the old man wants you to come with us, see what's there.
Ryan exchanged puzzled glances with the rest of the companions. Why would Jordan want to send them into an empty vill, unless it was to prove their loyalty to the cause? It wasn't a prospect that held much appeal. To be in a deserted vill with plenty of cover for any Inuit who chose to take a shot at them? On the other hand, who would be so stupid as to do that in front of the whole caravan? While it would be useful to know who they were up against when the firefight started at Fairbanks, it would only expose their enemies to the wrath of the Inuit chief and shaman. In the end, they had no real choice in the matter. They had to affirm Jordan's faith in them, or else the whole of the community, including the chief and shaman, would turn against them. While the caravan waited, strung out along the trail, half a dozen Inuit sect, along with the companions, walked in silence the 500 yards to the outskirts of the vill. In truth, the settlement was so small that it was almost an exaggeration to call it such. As they approached, all they could hear over the constant sounds of the windswept landscape was the banging of doors and window shutters, random and seemingly at the mercy of wind currents that constantly changed on this flat plain.
sure as hell sounds empty to me.
Yeah, but it ain't whoever lived there that we've got to worry about.
Got that right.
McIndo directed his men so that they spread and combed the bill. He gestured to Ryan that he should do the same with his people. Reluctantly, as he was unwilling to separate them in the maze that the settlement represented, Ryan followed suit, directing his people to follow the Inuit sect into the ville. The settlement had been evacuated quickly and violently. Ryan frowned as he saw doors ripped from the fronts of cabins and shattered windows. There were dark patches in the clustered ice around the tracks that snaked between the huts and some remnants of bone. It was an almost identical scene to the ville they had encountered before stumbling into the Inuit hunting party, and the sudden recall made the one-eyed warrior recoil slightly. The huts were empty, their contents nothing more than a mass of broken wood and ripped-up material. Mildred turned a corner and came face to face with McIndo as he stepped out of a hut.
Oh, shit! You frightened me.
Just making sure.
Making sure of what?
The sect man didn't reply, turning and walking away without a sound. The two parties met up at the edge of the settlement that led back to the trading trail.
Anything?
McIndo's men didn't speak, merely inclined their heads to indicate that nothing had been found. He looked at Ryan questioningly.
Empty. Not sure what the hell we were supposed to find, anyway.
The two parties began to make their way back to the trail, where the caravan waited patiently for them.
What?
Ryan whirled to see a plume of smoke rise from the far side of the settlement.
You said you found nothing! You didn't look! Go back, dammit!
Ryan felt his guts churn in warning. McIndo was one of those who were set against them. It had to be. He had deliberately raised his voice and chosen his words so that they would carry to Thompson, McPhee, and Jordan. If the companions refused to go back and search the ville once more, they would look like incapable cowards. If they did, then there was likely a trap waiting for them. And if McIndo was against them, it was safe to assume that the majority of the sect would follow him. They had no choice.
Let's go back.
The companions turned and jogged toward the ville. They had their blasters to hand, but knew that they were unlikely to face a living enemy. Smoke was now rising from one hut within the cluster of the settlement, and Mildred knew it was the one she had seen McIndo exit from. She relayed this as they ran.
Triple Red, you don't know what that bastard has laid in there. Fan out. Approach with extreme caution.
The companions spread out, each taking a separate route into the settlement. JB opted for the most direct. The armorer had an idea of the kind of trap McIndo might lay, and wanted to be first on the scene. As he approached the hut that had been fired, the smoke was beginning to billow out in waves that threatened to stop him getting closer. Choking back the smoke, ignoring the way in which his eyes were streaming, JB forged ahead into the doorway of the cabin. The fire had been set in the far corner, but why? JB scanned the room through the thick smoke and caught sight of what he was after. A large block of Classex in the near corner with a fuse attached. A fuse that was itself attached to a tallow wick to light it. The flames from the fire were closing on the wick. A block that size would take out half the ville. He had to move quickly. JB pulled himself away from the cabin and began to run.
Get the hell back!
The companions turned and backtracked. Straggling out in a line, they traveled 200 yards when the Classex went up. The force threw them forward onto the rock, showered with debris. The caravan scattered before regrouping in the stillness that followed the explosion. Ryan raised his head. The caravan was in confusion, and all his people were out of the danger zone, but he noted the way in which McIndo and several other Inuit were staring at them. Fairbanks couldn't come soon enough. It was still another day until they reached Fairbanks. A day of marching and wind-driven conditions that took on an atmosphere of suspicion and indecision. The companions kept to the rear of the caravan as before, trying to keep themselves apart from the horde of the Inuit. They were not, however, allowed to fall too far behind. McIndo may have made it obvious to them that he was one of the tribe who felt hostility at their presence. Indeed, as sect chief, he was able to cause a lot of trouble for them if he wished. But he kept his own counsel after the explosion in the deserted ville. He may wish to be rid of them himself, but he also knew that Thompson and McPhee were enthralled to Jordan, and that they had trust in the stranger's judgment. If he wanted to be rid of the outsiders, then he would have to wait until such time as he was able to dispose of them in an inconspicuous manner. Perhaps a few misplaced shots in the heat of a firefight. Meanwhile, knowing that they would hang back and perhaps make a break for it if circumstances allowed, the sec chief detailed a larger unit of men to drop back and keep the rear of the caravan guarded. The more that Ryan tried to retreat his group from the main body for their own protection, the more they had sec men snapping at their heels like rabid dogs, driving them closer to the tribe. After their pace had once again been forced by an Inuit with a Sharps rifle coming up behind them to hustle them closer to the pack, Christie turned to Ryan.
Ryan, you think either of the main men is in on this?
Thompson believes totally in Doc. He's virtually given up being Baron to let Doc run the show. McPhee, though, there's something not quite right there. It's like he believes but doesn't want to.
Maybe he finds the idea of Doc being inhabited by a 200-year-old spirit as crazy as I do. He may be the medicine man, but he's not stupid.
That's a pretty reasonable assumption. I don't know if he'd really go against the chief, though. I can't see him having the balls to do it.
Which leaves us with a laughing boy of the sec force leading the charge.
As much as anyone's leading us, he is. I don't think there's really an organized campaign to get us. They haven't had time to get that together. But those who don't want us around can spot the like-minded, and they're loosely allied, if only by an unspoken agreement.
So what you're saying is that we've got to watch our backs, because we could get shot at from anywhere at any time, right?
That's about it, Christie. Can't pin it down to more than that.
I feel so much better knowing that.
An Inuit sec man ran up to them. Without speaking, he prodded Christie with the barrel of his rifle and gestured that they should hurry, and also that they should shut up. They upped their pace to move closer to the main caravan.
Yeah, so much better.
Climatic conditions were holding well for them. One brief flurry of storm was all that they had so far encountered. The skies were still heavy with the yellow-tinged chem clouds, but the ominous scudding of the roaring cross-currents prevented the dark belly of the sky from opening and unleashing its hail of liquid cold upon the caravan. The trading trail wound across the plain, passing crops of exposed rock and banks of snow hardened into ice. The horizon stretched endlessly in front of them as they trudged, the only sound being their marching feet and the yelping of the dogs as they pulled on the heavy supply sleds. They rested three times during the day. Each was timed by wristchron so that it came at a regular interval. At each break, there was no time to set up camp, so the Inuit hunkered down together, using their own body heat, trapped in their furs and skins, magnified by their mass for warmth. Water and food was taken to replenish them for the next stage of the journey. When these breaks came, Ryan and his people sat apart from the mass. They felt safer, though it was doubtful any attempt to attack them would be made in full view of the chief, the medicine man, and Jordan. It wasn't this that was getting under their skins. It was the sense of not knowing, the living every second on a knife edge of expectation and looking at every impassive Inuit face, wondering if it was friend or foe. They were as glad as the Inuit when the time came to stop resting and to continue marching. There were no more villes between here and Fairbanks. This much Ryan knew from the map he had seen in Thompson's cabin the first day they had arrived at the settlement. But he figured that there may be a few more far-flung cabins along the route. Something other than the geology of the land had to account for the way in which the trading trail altered direction from time to time. The vast plain was treacherous, sure. Shelf rock gave way to hidden ice and snow that could suck you in without warning. But there was more to the detours than this. He whispered to J.B., who had been reckoning their direction by the mini-sextant that he habitually carried.
Weird thing is that it feels like we're turning almost in the opposite direction to Fairbanks at times. I can't figure out why, unless...
Unless what?
Unless this trail was made not to drive as straight a track as possible between two points, but was intended to take in any hunters and trappers along the way.
You know, I was wondering about the same thing myself. It'd make sense to link up everyone between here and Ank Ridge, right?
Right. Question is, what are the trappers going to think when they see us bearing down on them?
If I was them, I'd be inclined to wonder what we were up to, and how long it was going to be before I shit myself, knowing I was outnumbered so heavily.
Yeah, or just maybe I'd hightail it to Fairbanks, where I'd feel a whole lot safer, and try to warn the bigger numbers what was coming so they'd be prepared.
Sure as shit would I do.
The armorer and Ryan fell silent, both lost in thoughts that ran along similar lines. They'd assumed that the Inuit caravan would bear down on their target without much chance of being seen until they were too close for the dwellers of Fairbanks to have time to prepare a defense. This assumption had been based on the Inuit having already attacked and decimated the smaller villes en route, but if the trail took them past lone trappers, or small groups of hunters and trappers, then these would have represented too small a target for the previous war parties, and there was no way you could hide a caravan this big. A few men and women could travel faster than a force this large. Moreover, the smaller groups, or individuals, would see the Inuit approaching from some distance, and would run like hell, giving them a good head start. Which meant that there was a strong likelihood that the residents of Fairbanks would be ready and waiting when the holy rolling caravan of Inuit warriors approached. Something that would make an already difficult firefight all the harder. Given the fact that they knew some of the Inuit would also waste no time in adding them to the numbers chilled, it made for a very uncomfortable situation. Watching carefully to see that their set guard was far enough away, and keeping his voice low so that it wouldn't travel, Ryan briefly outlined his concerns to the others. As he suspected, JB's mind had been working along similar lines. As for Jack, Mildred, and Christy, before he had even finished outlining the situation, they knew exactly where he was going. And there seemed to be no way out. To turn back would invite the wrath of the Inuit, who outnumbered them. To go on was to walk into a bloodbath. The best they could hope for was to try to extract themselves, and hopefully the deluded Doc, from the mess that would be Fairbanks, then head maybe for Ankh Ridge, maybe back to the redoubt to jump the hell out of here. Not much of a plan, and not much of a prospect. Meanwhile, there was the weather. Bitter cold, ice and snow blowing constantly against any exposed areas of skin, gales that cut through the layers of fur and skin, no matter how well you tried to wrap yourself up in them, and the heavy oppressive clouds that thundered across the skies. They seemed so low that you could almost reach up and touch them, puncturing the gray-yellow membrane that seemed to breathe in rhythm with the winds, loosing the chem-stained contents down on the land below. The clouds formed a ceiling that seemed to lower with almost every hour, pushing them closer and closer to the ground, making the icy air thicker so that it was like breathing iced water. The clouds bore down on everyone, at times seeming to slow the pace of progress to a crawl, the objective moving farther and farther from reach until it became nothing more than a distantly grasped dream. Visibility, despite the fact that it was still ostensibly daylight, decreased. The previously endless expanses of rock and ice became a smaller palette on which was imposed the straggling line of the caravan. It became harder to look back to see where they had been, and harder still to see what lay in front of them. It was when an irregular shape appeared through the gloom that Ryan knew the moment of truth was upon them.
Everybody! Halt!
Thompson halted the caravan when they were within 500 yards of the shape, which had resolved itself into a cluster of three huts. Two were log cabins with sheets of metal hammered into them, and the third was a cinder block building, smaller than the other two, which seemed to be more of a storage block than the others, which were definitely dwellings.